BBC Radio Suffolk. 23 minutes to one now. I'm Sarah Lilly. And we're heading rapidly towards the end of 2025. And it's a year when refugee and asylum issues have barely been out of the headlines. Nationally, there have been over 89,000 asylum applications in the UK in the year to September 2025. And locally, approximately 160 asylum seekers in dispersal accommodation. So to talk more about this, I'm joined in the studio by Martin Simmons from Suffolk Refugee Service, based in Ipswich, and their patron and former CEO of the British Red Cross, Sir Nick Young. Thank you both for being here. Good to
Thank
see
you, Sarah.
You.
Thank you, Sarah.
And first of all, Sir Nick, I guess your work with the British Red Cross means that you've seen both ends of the refugee chain.
Yes, I have. I mean, for 13 years of my life, I worked in every conflict zone and disaster area during that time. And I saw, people living in really dire and desperate circumstances. You know, really any conflict in your country, and indeed any disaster, massive, major disaster, natural disaster in your country, is almost by definition the worst moment in your life as an individual and indeed as a member of a family. So I've seen tens of thousands of people in absolutely desperate straits and desperate to get away from that situation if they possibly can. Now, as we know, in most cases when people get away or want to get away, the first thought is to a neighbouring country.
Yeah.
So that, for example, in the conflict, in conflicts we've seen in Africa and in the Middle East, people have gone in vast numbers. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions, to countries nearby. And, you know, that makes sense because these are countries where the culture may well be similar. There may be language similarities. It's much easier to get home again when the situation becomes safe. So certainly in my experience in the Red Cross, those who have sought to go further and to reach, for example, Europe, tend to be the most desperate ones, tend to be the ones in greatest danger, and tend to be the ones who have the energy, the commitment, the passion, if you like, the desperation, to get away, but to continue to do something with their lives and to contribute to the community that they eventually find their way to. And so I passionately believe that in terms of policy as a whole, we should be doing two things. Personally, I believe that we should be working with other countries, particularly countries in the West, to facilitate that move towards neighbouring countries, to make it easier for these neighbouring countries who are often poor countries without the resources naturally to look after a vast and often very sudden influx of asylum seekers and refugees. So that's the first thing, I think. And that's a kind of UN initiative that really needs to be promoted much more strongly than it is. But secondly, I do believe that countries in the West, we have a duty to regard those who come to us in desperate, dire straits, including those who come across the channel in small boats, to treat them with fairness and decency, to look with compassion at their plight, and to do everything we can to make them welcome here, as we have in this country, and indeed particularly in this county, for hundreds of years. I do actually believe that our British values of fairness and decency are very, very relevant here.
As I said in the introduction, refugee and asylum issues have been a mainstay of our news headlines over the year. How does this compare to previous years?
I think the discourse about asylum and migration has become a deeply poisonous one. And I think it is terribly, terribly disappointing that the voices we hear most are those who are seeking to use the asylum and migration issue as a wedge to further political advantage. I'm not suggesting that there aren't many thousands of ordinary people who worry about the impact of asylum and migration on their own jobs and on their own communities. And let's be clear, a country is entitled to put limits on those who come, to impose criteria that need to be satisfied. Totally accept that. But I think when you look at the numbers, and you look at the relative wealth of our country, and you look at the attitude of most people, which is one of compassion and decency, I think this issue has become inflated beyond all reason in the list of issues that we face as a country. I mean, growth, the National Health Service, the education system, our roads, defence. It's nowhere near as serious as those.
But it is fair to say that not everybody is comfortable with the amount of people looking to come here. Do you think attitudes have changed recently, and if so, why?
I think attitudes have changed in recent years, and I think it is the nature of the political debate. I mean, we've seen it, well, you know, across Europe, we've seen it across the Atlantic, and it's happening here. We have to accept that this is a legitimate debate to have. It's entirely right what you say, that individuals do feel concerned and threatened. But the way to deal with that is not to give way to that concern, but to have a proper, informed debate and discourse about it. And that's what worries me, is that we hear the loud voices, you might say, on the right, although it's not exclusively on the right. You will hear those loud voices. We don't hear the voices of ordinary, decent folk who also have a point of view on this issue.
But do you think for those ordinary, decent folk, there's confusion between people coming here illegally and refugees?
Oh, I think there's no doubt at all. There are issues of definition. There are issues of just recognising the relatively small number. I mean, you know, we endlessly hear this issue of the small boats across the channel. And, you know, those people are putting themselves at great danger because 99% of cases because they're desperate. The numbers are small. I mean, 40-odd thousand coming across the channel. And they come across the channel, I believe, Martin will comment on this, I believe they are experiencing here in Suffolk, as they mostly come across the channel because A, because they're desperate, and B, because there are no legal routes for them to follow. So they get stuck.
What was it about Suffolk Refugee Support that made you passionate to become patron?
Oh, I've watched this organisation grow and develop over 20 years or more. I mean, the Red Cross has a proud tradition of working with refugees and asylum seekers. And I played a great part when I was chief executive in really promoting that activity. But it's a difficult activity. It's very difficult in this political climate we're talking about to raise money. It's very difficult to generate support for providing help for those people. So any charity that, you know, is prepared to stick its neck out, really, and to risk public opprobrium, and, you know, there are people who object violently to the work that organisations like Suffolk Refugee Support do. And I've been very proud to watch the determination with which people like Martin, his chief executive, the trustees of the organisation, its staff and volunteers, work to make life, well, to say better, suggests that it's somehow comfortable to be an asylum seeker here in the UK. It's not comfortable at all. It's a pretty miserable existence. You're dispersed to often very remote parts of the country. That's what happens here in Suffolk. There's very little by way of support available in the local community. You're not allowed to work and support your family. It's a tough life. And I think an organisation that stands up for those people and says, look, we have a duty of decency and kindness and reasonableness to do what we can for these people, I think it demands admiration, respect and support. So I was thrilled to be asked to be a patron. It's a role I take very, very seriously. They probably see far more of me in the office than they really want to. But actually, I believe in it passionately, and I'm determined to go on doing it
Martin,
as much strength as I can.
And Martin, let's talk about the picture here in Suffolk. How have things been over the last year?
It's been challenging, Sarah, but that's... I probably sat here in previous years and said the same also. It's I think this year has felt particularly acute some of the challenges we've dealt with, both in terms of the needs of the people we're supporting, the greater geographical spread of people around Suffolk, the Home Office placing people in new and sometimes more remote parts of the county where there are very few support services nearby. And so we're having to try and fill in more and more of those gaps and make sure people aren't left too isolated and with needs that are unmet. But also we've touched upon it already, the external environment has become more challenging this year in terms of policy changes, in terms of and frankly, some of the hostility that we've seen towards our work. And our work is essentially trying to show decency and compassion and practical support for people when they're sometimes at their lowest point and need it.
How difficult is it for people to integrate into the society?
I think it all depends what support is put in place for that integration. So if you look at two of the different groups of refugees and asylum seekers in Suffolk, you look at those small number who are able to access refugee resettlement routes, which is at the moment predominantly Afghan refugees, although that scheme is now closed to new applicants, but we're still seeing some arrivals from people who were waiting to reach the UK. Those people, they're allowed to work from day one. They're given much more support up front, some of which provided through ourselves. And so they have a much better chance of integrating. We see people succeeding, you know, hugely, who arrive, you know, not speaking very much English, and within weeks or months they're working, their kids are thriving at school. You know, we've got some fantastic examples of young Afghans who've become school and college ambassadors and are doing public speaking. And so that's one side of
it. But the numbers of those numbers are tiny, Martin.
They are tiny, yeah, yeah. And I mean, nationally, it's just over 7,000 people were able to access the UK on those safe resettlement schemes.
Special resettlement
yeah,
schemes.
Yeah, which is 0.01% of the world's refugees. If you are from the world's worst humanitarian crisis in Sudan at the moment, for instance, there is absolutely zero way to access one of those resettlement schemes. On the other hand, if you come as an asylum seeker, you're not allowed to work. You're shunted around the country by the Home Office on a no-choice basis. And we have seen this year increasingly people being moved at no notice, sometimes late in the day, to quite rural parts of Suffolk where they have nothing. They know no one. If they're lucky, they will have our phone number and be able to contact us, and we will be able to check in with them and make sure that they're okay. Sometimes people arrive and a meagre amount of financial support they're supposed to receive from the Home Office hasn't come through because there have been errors in the system and people are left with literally in a new place after dark, no shops, no food. So those people the system is stacked against those people integrating quickly and successfully, because often they'll be waiting a long time for the decision on their asylum claims as well, which is another important part of the system. But despite that, we still see people in those situations wanting to contribute constantly, whether it's volunteering or getting involved in their new communities and the schools that their children are at. So we would always say, if you want people to succeed and integrate and thrive, put in the support up front, allow them to have some agency from the point at which they arrive.
I think it's also, Martin, worth saying that certainly our experience in Suffolk, and I can compare this with my experience in the Red Cross in other parts of the country, is that Suffolk people are remarkably generous in their response to this issue. I think we see this in communities around the communities around the county. We see it in the sort of support that we generate as an organisation. I feel that people here in Suffolk take a very reasonable approach and a really very significant degree of understanding, which we don't see in other parts of the country. And certainly want to encourage that and to say to people out there who have stepped up and tried to help these the relatively small numbers who come to this county, thank you so much for what you do. Please continue to do it. And please talk to your neighbours and friends about just the importance of us recognising that often these people are people who have fled appalling diversity and difficulty and who really want to contribute to our communities. And we should welcome that and welcome them in.
This is a subject that we could talk, you know, for hours about. And I said at the beginning, you know, it's the situation with the refugee and asylum issues barely been out of the headlines. But if we had, you know, as we head towards Christmas, what would your kind of, if we've got to sort of come to an end of the interview, what would your final sort of message be to people?
Well, I think I would say to people in communities around Suffolk who have within their midst people who are themselves asylum seekers or have been on and are have been granted, people who come from elsewhere, Christmas is traditionally a time for reaching out and involving in our family groups and friendship groups people who come from elsewhere and showing them that here in Suffolk, at least, there is a warm welcome for them and a depth of understanding about what they have come to and indeed about the uncertainty of the future they still face. We're looking at, you know, the Suffolk Refugee Support has some serious concerns about the reforms that are being proposed by the government in terms of the way we receive and deal with people who come here seeking asylum. And I hope that Suffolk people will continue to prove that the need for us to somehow treat them harshly is a fake need, is not the case and is actually not the way we will deal with them here in this county.
I would second that, and I'd also pay tribute to the people of Suffolk who have shown such generosity on the Homes for Ukraine scheme, taking Ukrainian refugees into their own homes, but also in villages around the county this year. And if they're listening, there'll be people who know who I'm referring to, who have stepped up within their own communities when they've had people put upon, you know, put in their communities by the Home Office with very little support, who have stepped up and provided all sorts of generous support themselves. And my overall ask would be to this debate has become so dehumanized this year, where we so rarely hear about the lived reality of asylum seekers. I would ask people to think beyond the rhetoric and the headlines and just get to understand the issues. If you have a chance to speak to an asylum seeker and hear their story, please do so. Let's try to put some humanity and lived reality back into it.
Reach out. Christmas is a time when we should all reach out to those who are sad or lonely or facing difficult circumstances in our community. Now's the time to do that.
Thank you both so much for coming in. We're running out of time, but really appreciate you being here. Joining us in the studio, Martin Simmons from Suffolk Refugee Support, along with Sir Nick Young, who is the patron as well.
Thank
you both.
Thanks for your time, Sarah, and thanks to your listeners.